For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. And Ed, you know, kind of the way it occurred back in 1987 is that Tim Brown pretty much won the Heisman halfway through the year because everybody mailed in their votes. I'm going to contend that the most valuable player for Notre Dame's football team this year is none other than Cam McDaniel, and it's going to end up being that way. But hey, that would only be my second prediction come true for him.
So, you're trying to say he locked up the Heisman on Saturday? Is that...
I'm saying he locked up the most valuable player for the Fighting Irish here in the 2013 season.
I guess when you're a running back that averages more than 2 yards a carry, that's what gets you Mike Brammer seal of approval.
It's the way he does it, though. Ed.
I know.
It's the way he
does
it.
No, you're right. Listen, you're right. He definitely is the only running back we seem to have who can get through the initial contact and keep going. I mean, you know, George Atkinson, first hit, first touch, whether it's below the waist, above the waist, it just doesn't seem like.
Yeah, I agree. It is a little bit of a concern. I mean, I'm a little bit nervous about it, simply from that standpoint, because we just don't seem to have. And although Carlisle showed signs of it in the first game, because I did think he ran pretty hard and seemed to be able to shake off that initial point of contact. He didn't see a whole heck of a lot of action on Saturday.
Nope.
I don't know if he was banged up or what the situation was, but that was a little bit surprising. But yeah, in any event, I do tip my hat to Cam McDaniel. I think he's just a kid that loves the game of football, plays that way, plays hard, and you know, I think he's got a knack for reading the hole. And like you say, when he does hit the hole, it's not like he goes down with an arm tackle.
Right.
I think he does hit it hard, and he kind of goes to the right spot, and he gets the most out of what he can possibly get out, even if it is, 3 yards a crack. The truth is, he gets it. He's not a guy that is held very often at the line of scrimmage with just being bounced off somebody.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, we didn't even know that he was going to be playing Saturday with a broken bone in his hand or whatever. That was kind of news. And what's interesting is, I don't know if has he caught a pass yet this year.
I was just thinking of that. I don't think he has caught anything out of the backfield, so that's a little strange, because you would think, just the athlete that he is, that he's probably got good hands. But now with the cast he's wearing, I'm assuming he's not going to be a primary target, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and plus he also seems like the kind of guy that could, you know, because of his ability to set up his blocks a little bit better, and you know, that he would be a good guy to throw a screen pass to, you know, that he would But maybe we'll see that at some point.
I guess I'll do this. I'll go out on a limb and make my next prediction for the Notre Dame backfield, and that's going to be that as long as he's here, and I'm sure he will be. I don't know why he wouldn't, but I do think Greg Bryant's going to end up being the best Notre Dame back in the last 15 years when he's done.
Why did Folsom see time on Saturday and he didn't? And by the way, Folsom was the only other guy that seemed to...
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. You know, here's the thing that's strange, and this is going back to the game before at Purdue. Granted, they could have changed the play, but they bring Brian in. The defense calls a timeout right before the ball snap. The next thing you know, he comes off the field. He doesn't even get a carry. Now, it could be that they change plays, and they're therefore, in changing the call, they then decided to go with somebody else out of the backfield. And I guess that kind of makes sense. But I do find it a little bit strange in that, just from what I've been hearing at practice, that he is one of the more impressive runners from a strength standpoint and from a breakaway speed standpoint.
Well, I think what we're seeing, you know, at a lot of positions is what I call the Joe Montana effect. And that is, you know, one of the issues that this team has and that these coaches have is they're trying to kind of figure out who are their gamers? You know, who are their playmakers? Who are their, because, you know, as you recall, Joe Montana never would have seen the field at Notre Dame if he would have been evaluated purely on his practice performance.
Right.
But he was just one of those guys that once, you know, the lights went on and once the, you know, the stadium was full, he just performed at a whole different level. He's just a guy that was made to play the game. And I think, you know, what they're doing with Grace, what they're doing with the safeties, what they're doing with the running backs, what they're doing with, you know, I mean, poor Ben Koyak. I mean, you know, I don't, he is like, you know, I haven't seen a whipping boy, like this since, Lou Holtz went after Hunter Backich, I think the guy's name was, over and over again, just about every week on the sidelines. So, you know, it's, they're with the personnel is, you know, is an issue because they're just trying to find the guys that, you know, that play better on Saturdays. As we know, that isn't always the same guys who play, you know, who look the best Monday through Friday.
Yeah, that's right. So I do think that you're going to see a little bit more and more of that as we start heading into the meat of this schedule. And certainly it starts this Saturday with Oklahoma. I mean, these are now where these critical games have come about. Not that the first four weren't critical, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying that the identity of the football team starts to kind of show forth at this point in the season. And it could very well be that we are struggling a little bit, but certainly I think from a leadership standpoint, there looks to be a little bit of a void there at the moment. That's probably more than what we're used to seeing.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe it's because of, you know, the experience that we had before, you know, Brian Kelly got here. But, you know, you still have this feeling going into this Oklahoma game that, you know, in the back of your mind, it's like, oh, we could lose this thing 34-13. Or at least I have that feeling. And partly that's just because you just don't have a good grasp or a good feel for kind of where, you know, where these guys are coming from. I think it won't be that kind of a game. And I think, you know, we'll be in it, you know, it'll be close and, you know, all those kinds of things. But there's just this, you know, they just don't feel kind of, you know, kind of in sync or put together. And then you kind of look at, you know, Michigan struggling with Akron and Connecticut and you say to yourself, what exactly do we have here?
I think I had thought that coming out of this Michigan, had we done a pregame show, which we didn't, and we couldn't pull it off. But, you know, I was expecting a close game. I think I tweeted before the game, 27-24, with us scoring a fourth quarter touchdown. But, you know, the idea was, I thought coming out of Michigan State, we were going to have a much better feel for who this football team is and where we're going to kind of end up this year. I'm not sure I'm there yet. I think I need this Oklahoma game to tell me where we're going to be and where we're at and where the identity of this football team is going to be. I do agree with you. I have that sense that we just haven't seemed to settle on a strength offensively. That's kind of our go-to approach because it sure doesn't seem like it's the running game. I mean, granted, Michigan State's a very good football team defensively, and they definitely have some studs on that side of the ball. But I think just in general, you look at what we've done from a running standpoint, and it's not like there's a whole heck of a lot to hang your hat there as far as pure strengths. And then throwing the football, we did exactly what I thought we were going to do coming out, which was test them deep to loosen them up, to take advantage of some over-the-top plays. But I don't know that I really liked what I saw in that attempt.
Right.
I mean, not a lot of balls thrown that were catchable by us and not catchable by them. But,
well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, he wasn't exactly Tommy touchdown on Saturday, but he wasn't Tommy turnover either. And you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, if your defense starts to play better, you know, your offense can lose you the game, you know, if you turn the ball over. You know, again, I think they're going to have to put up some points to, you know, to beat Oklahoma. I'd be surprised if we have if the defense is able to hold Oklahoma under, 20 points, for instance, you know, under 24 points. I mean, I expect him much, but I do think that we match up a little bit better with Oklahoma in the sense that, you know, if last year is any indication, they're not as physical and they're not as tough a team defensively as, say a Michigan State. So, you know, it's obvious that the formula to beat Notre Dame, that, you know, tried until proven otherwise, is, you know, to obviously you've got to have a better offensive performance in Michigan State. And thank you, Mark D'Antonio, for, you know, shooting your own team in the foot several times in the second half. But boy, you know, just pack the box, cut off the run and try and force Tommy into an error, or, you know, put you in third and longs over and over and over again.
I think we're clearly going to see a lot of that on Saturday, much as I thought we were going to see against Michigan State, which is eight guys in the box and then being aggressive on the short routes, meaning that they're going to jump those a couple times. And they did, which leads you to believe that, okay, well then go deep, which we did.
Right.
We just didn't have a heck of a lot of success there. And I thought if you look back, there were several times where we had opportunities in short situations that we did try and go long.
Right.
You know, there were a couple times where third and one, and all of a sudden we're throwing it deep into the end zone. And I think it was just simply because Michigan State had our number and they knew what our tendency was and they were going to, you know, flood that.
Sure.
So that being the case, I thought the coaching was actually really good. And I did like what I saw on Saturday from that regard. I mean, Brian Kelly has to this point proven that he can beat the teams that he should beat and show some difference coaching wise to get us a win when we needed it. And I thought he did it on Saturday. And I thought that as the game progressed and the approach that he took and some noticeable things ended up being the difference in the game. And when, you know, it's 3 points like that, yeah, there's certainly some calls we could discuss here.
Sure.
Although I just thought it was one. I mean, I really thought, I did not see the interference call right before the half. I missed that. I was transferring locations where I was watching the game. But so I didn't see that one. I can't comment on that one. But all the other ones I thought were clearly interference, except for the one on Chris Robinson. Corey Robinson, I mean. Yeah, that's a play that you could have called. But if I were Brian Kelly, I would have said, hey, you know what? Tell Mark to go watch the Michigan game and tell me that Bennett Jackson played any different than his player.
Well, it was funny because, you know, Brian Kelly after the game, Alex Flanagan, you know, asked him about the pass interference calls. And he was like, well, they're playing man. Actually, I thought we could have gotten a few more. So,
exactly.
he's never going to, Brian Kelly is funny that way. He's never going to, you know, kind of give you an inch on that kind of stuff. And, you know, listen, rightly so. I mean, the thing that was, you know, the reason that it was an issue is because it seemed like, you know, almost all but one of the calls were on third down. You know, I mean, they were big, big penalties that affected the game.
Yeah, they clearly were big, huge plays. I mean, there's no doubt about it. No different, though, than the Michigan game for us.
Right.
Just same situation. They get accentuated when there's that much on the line on that particular play. You know, the one that he yanked Davaris Daniels down at the 2-yard line, I mean, you got to call that.
Gosh,
you can't not call that.
Right.
I mean, that's just a flat-out interference call. There's no two ways about it. So, yeah, he can cry all he wants with regard to that, but the truth is, other than the one against Robinson, which I understand why he threw the flag there, you know, that the defender, I thought, had his head turned and was making contact, and then after the contact, turned around. So, you know, depending upon where you are on that play as a ref, you're going to grab your flag.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, that goes either way. And he could have not called it and I wouldn't have gone nuts. I would have, you know, been here it goes again. But anyways, I think that was a bit of a, you know, to have to put up listening to that as the reason why Michigan State lost is a bit much. But, you know, further to the game, I think that the other thing that does seem to kind of be rearing its ugly head is just a middle linebacker play. And what looks to be a little bit more and more play by Grace moving into that position. So it's going to be interesting to see here what shakes out the rest of the season. But I do think that, you know, we're kind of in that jump from last year to holy cow, we no longer have Monte, and it's pretty obvious and it's pretty evident. And not only that, but it's becoming an exploitation on us from a defensive standpoint, that's going to be one of the sore spots as we continue to move ahead here. All the more pressures on that defensive line to make something happen.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, again, you know, they got to the quarterback finally, you know, Tua did, you know, they got to the quarterback a couple times. Not as, you know, again, they seem to have him always just kind of a half second, you know, slow. But I thought the defensive backfield played a little bit better. And, you know, Grace is obviously the future there. I mean, that's who they – I think that's – you know, they think he's the most athletic, and, you know, they think he's got good instincts, and that's fine. But, you know, defensively, I'm still not kind of sold on this unit, because it just seems to me that, you know, to me a defense kind of makes its bones in how it responds at key points in the game. And this defense cannot get off the field after we get a touchdown. You know, it gives up long sustained drives after we get some momentum by scoring a touchdown. And it, you know, it was absolutely, you know, gave up a bunch of third down conversions on that first drive of the second half. You know, I really thought we were going to lose the football game after that first drive of the second half, because it just did not seem that we could hold, you know, Michigan State to less than four and a half, five yards a carry. Why D'Antonio kind of, you know, went away from that. You know, I thought even when he took his, you know, quarterback out, it didn't make any sense that he could have, you know, just kept running the ball, that little guy Hill or whatever his name was, that they just gave up all that too early.
I don't understand that at all. In fact, I was thinking to myself, man, he must be hurt. It's got to be. Right. Because that's just way too much of a – at the last minute like that, it just made no sense.
Because they just blew us off the ball in that first drive of the second half.
Yeah, they did. And I like you, I was a bit concerned after that, because that was not a good sign. Thinking that we would have gone into the locker room and Kelly would have had his way with the players, you would have thought that they would have responded from that standpoint. So,
but again, you know, we held them to a field goal. And, you know,
I think you can't really argue with the defensive effort on Saturday.
No, you can't. I mean, you can't argue with the effort.
13 points. Yeah. I mean, hey, you got it. I'll take that all day long. Tell me that at the beginning of the game, and I would have said, heck yeah. So I did like a lot of things I did see. I think Tua seems to be improving game to game. So maybe the truth is that he's now getting himself into more game shape than he was able to prior to the season. Let's hope that's the case. And, you know, let's hope he's kind of burning off that extra fat. But he did seem to be playing a little bit more aggressively, a little better. He had the one sack, although he was kind of flushed out of the pocket a little bit. But even so, he was there to make the play. But, you know, I think that against Oklahoma, it's going to come down to that. It's going to come down to how well does our defensive line play, sustain the blocks, and then not allow any kind of scrambling effort to be an all-day occurrence.
Yeah. A healthy,
because I do think we're going to see that.
Yeah,
we're going to see some scrambling.
Yeah, a healthy Sheldon Day would make a big difference. I don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in, but they could really use him, you know, on.
Yeah, I would agree. I didn't hear any of the injury report. Was there anything of note?
I think in the press conference on Sunday, the idea was that he should be fine for Oklahoma, that he was making good progress. But, you know, I mean, you kind of take anything that they say about these these injuries with a grain of salt. Obviously, they didn't say a word about you know, Cam McDaniel's broken bone. I don't know. I just don't think you could put much, you know, they're just jerking us around when it comes to the injuries. They really are.
Yeah. And that's just all part of the game.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to hear any, it doesn't surprise me at all that Cam McDaniel wasn't announced. I mean, that's just not something you're going to do
prior
to the game. It doesn't do anything for you.
Right.
Although I think that Holtz was a master at that and playing it up prior to Saturday, so he could make it sound like we were going to get beat by 40 points. But yeah, you know, I do think that if we're healthy and we're there, this is the kind of game that you know, coaching staffs can make a difference in. And I, like you, I guess there's a little bit of fear that, yeah, there's the potential we could lose 34-13. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, Tommy's got to have a better day throwing the ball, you know. And,
yeah, the pressure will be on. I agree.
And I don't understand, I think, you know, if they're going to play, if they're going to have all these one-on-one matchups, I mean, they just really didn't look for Nicholas at all. You know, so, and again, you know, I think that the philosophy is, you know, throwing the ball to the middle of the field or slants or, you know, crossing routes to the tight end and stuff that just, you know, ups the percentage of a turnover, of a tip ball, you know, of a ball batted in the air, of, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. And so their philosophy was, we're just going to keep taking shots deep and we're going to hit a couple and hopefully it'll be enough to win the game. But we're going to instruct Tommy just to air it out and throw it in the stands if he doesn't see it as a possibility, and throw it where only a Notre Dame receiver can get their hands on it. And, you know, it worked. I'm not convinced that that'll work against Oklahoma. I think it's a different kind of team with much more firepower on offense.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the pressure is going to be on us from a defensive standpoint, because they're obviously a much better offensive team than Michigan State, and therefore are likely to put some points on the board, which means that we are going to have we're going to need some of those responsive defensive stances, like after we score a touchdown, like after we grab some momentum.
Right.
It's going to be important that these guys seize that and take advantage of that, because without doing that, it's going to put us in a precarious situation that's what you don't want to leave for. I'm going to be surprised if we don't see a little bit of a different approach with maybe a few more back shoulder passes, you know, a few more quick slants, like you say.
I also think that we're going to, you know, make a little bit more of a commitment to the running game. I mean, I think we're going to try and, you know, put ourselves in a position where we can bang on them in the second half, like we did at the end of the game against Purdue and like we did against Oklahoma at Norman last year, you know. So I think, you know, they're going to kind of take a look at things and see especially if they get even a little bit of a lead, where I think you could see a whole lot of Cam McDaniel in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think if there's anything that's almost going to guarantee now is if we do have any kind of a lead, you're going to see that kid in the backfield a lot. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's the one that they trust for sure.
He's the workhorse for right now, and you know he's getting it done. I think that it's a huge advantage to have somebody grind it like that, and maybe not such a bad thing to take three downs, four downs to do it, as long as you're moving the pile forward.
Right.
So.
Right.
In any event, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jernanek, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.